Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. How you doing, Pete?
When do I get my certification? When do I get my badge, medal, tattoo? I want to know.
Next time you're here, Pete,
yay!
I'll rustle up something.
I think next time we're going to meet in real life, you are going to be knackered from a big old bike ride by the sounds of things.
Yes, my last dying act as I get off the bicycle, having cycled for 2,000 kilometres, will be pulling out some sort of special badge for you.
Yeah, you're a younger man than me, so I imagine your cycling skills are probably second to none. But I am worried about how much work this is going to be for you.
To be honest, I'm trying not to think about it. I've started going round telling everyone, oh yeah, I'm going to cycle across Japan. Everyone's like, oh yeah, good luck with that. And some people are amazed, some people are in awe. But for me, it hasn't really dawned on me what a challenge it is. I keep just imagining me cycling through a nice flat rice field, beautiful scenery, not a real challenge physically. Mm. But the reality is I'll be going through hills and mountains and all sorts, and I probably will die. So, but I'm trying to think about it.
Yeah, well, I've got to get off the plane at Tokyo, obviously, and then get away from, get towards wherever you were going to be, probably the west of the country or the southwest. I might end up just, going north to wherever you've got to, Sendai or wherever.
In hospital in Sendai, yeah. Who knows? We might be able to convince you to join the cycle at some point. Unlikely. Mm. By the way, I finally did it. I finally saw Isle of Dogs after 3 or 4 months of talking about it, about 4 months after you first saw it.
Wow.
I finally watched it. It was great. It was a work of art.
It is. I think it's one of those films where I've yapped on about it so much and you've been wanting to see it for such a long time. It was only ever going to be a little bit of a disappointment. It's a beautiful film.
It is. A work of art. Like, the stop motion's amazing, and I love the interpretation of Japan. I love Nagasaki, where Nagasaki meets Tokyo. The only thing I felt was a bit underwhelming, the only criticism I could think of is it felt like it was building towards something that never really came. I don't know. At the end, the third act felt a little bit underwhelming, but really, it was an amazing film. It's one of my top three Wes Anderson movies, up there with Grand Budapest Hotel, Moonrise Kingdom. So if you're a listener who hasn't seen it, definitely go and watch it. You have to watch it. It's part of your homework. After listening to this podcast, go and watch Isle of Dogs. You won't regret it.
I think Wes Anderson's films have been had that criticism levelled at them before. That they build, and there's not really much of a payoff, because he's very much a guy who likes a quiet kind of film, doesn't he? He likes it to be very, very calm, and small things meaning bigger things, and it's quite interesting in that way. There's a bit where I can't remember the name of, is it Atari, or what was the name of the kid? Atarashi? Atarashi means new, isn't it?
Atarashi.
Atarashi means new, isn't it?
I think something like Atari.
Yeah, Atari. Something
I
like
want
that.
To say Atari.
Atari. He goes into this kind of... it's like a little sort of igloo built out of bottles of sake. Sort of discarded bottles of sake. And I know for a fact, because they did a tour of where they took all of the stop motion animation models and some of the sets and stuff and put it in a bar in Charing Cross in London. Each one of those bottles were hand fired. Like they fired those tiny bottles, one of them out of glass just to make the diffused light accurate. Incredible craft, incredible.
I must admit, I was watching the whole thing thinking, how have they done this?
Yeah.
The puppets and the stop motion. It seems... I don't know, it seems... I often look at CGI sequences in films these days and feel underwhelmed. Even really epic scenes, you know, you just go, oh, that's just lots of people in a room just doing it on a computer. But with this, I did wonder how a lot of it was made, and I'd really like to see how it was done behind the scenes. Although I know it was made in London, which is quite cool. A lot of it was like made and filmed in London. So, yes, I would like to know how they did it.
It was
a masterpiece.
It was very respectful to the Japanese language, I thought, in many ways. It was treated with the greatest of respect. There was a lot of Japanese in there, wasn't there?
There was a lot, yeah. For people that don't understand Japanese, I guess I can't really understand how it would feel. I was lucky, because there's no subtitles for the Japanese speakers, right?
No.
Which was one of the criticisms of the movies. They sort of, some people said it was like treating Japanese characters as non-human characters. Which I don't think is fair at all. But, it was interesting. I was obviously sitting there with an audience filled with Japanese viewers, and I do wonder if they got the humour. They laughed, by my count, the Japanese viewers laughed 3 times throughout the entire film. but I do wonder, I'd like to have found out what they felt about the interpretation of the movie, to be honest. But yeah, I think it was well received.
Well, the other...
tell you what wasn't good.
What wasn't good, Chris?
Was going off on a little tangent. Last week, remember we talked about Clear Coke?
Oh yes, I think the Tab Clear.
I had it. Yes,
you had it.
I finally
it.
Had it. It's the weirdest looking thing, because you walk into the supermarket and you just have this wall of Coke, this wall of Coke bottles, except the bottles are just clear. It looks like someone's just taken a stolen load of Coke and filled it with water, or carbonated water, and just left it there. But I tried it, and the best way to describe it is it tastes like Coke that's been left out at a party,
right,
and you're sort of drinking it 2 days later. It's not good, and it's awful, and I don't know why anyone would ever buy it or like it. So it's awful.
Were you not surprised that it tasted like Coke, even though it was clear? I don't know. It's one of those things where we associate Coke with the brown gravy sort of substance. But seeing it clear,
it tasted a lot like Coke Lemon. You know, like lemon flavored.
Yes, okay, yeah.
It's a lot like that. Because clearly they knew they couldn't pull off the exact flavor of Coke.
So they put a bit of lemon in there.
Exactly. It's really well carbonated as well. I don't know why they've stuck a load of, like they've made it extremely fizzy. Like I opened the bottle and it just exploded. And when you take a sip of it, you can really taste the bubbles.
Yeah, beautiful.
Is that the best way to describe it? It's really, really carbonated and it's awful. And I don't know who would buy it. It's a bit of a gimmick, and I wonder how long it's actually going to last.
Well done, everybody.
And this week, we're going to be talking about a bit of news that's going on in Japan, a bit of news, and we're going to be answering your questions sent in through the fax machine.
Fax machine!
And the first news article, of course, has to be briefly touching upon the meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Obviously, it happened in Singapore, but it's been covered heavily in the media here. It seems ridiculous to say that I felt linked with the whole thing in some way, but like I feel a bit more intimately connected to the North Korean situation, given that I was woken up by a missile. that makes me, at the very least, an expert on the geopolitical situation of North Korea. Being woken up by a missile at 6 a.m. it does that. I don't know about you, but I was completely shocked to see just seeing Donald Trump with Kim Jong-un in person. It was a mind-blowing experience. I woke up on Tuesday, whipped open the phone, and it was just the most exciting thing to see it unravel. And I actually watched it live. I wouldn't normally do that, but I was so overwhelmed with excitement and just, I was hoping there was going to be like an argument and someone was going to get slapped. It didn't happen, fortunately. The closest they came to it was Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un were sat around the dinner table, around the table about to have lunch. And Donald Trump said to the cameraman, "Oh, please try and make us all look thin and handsome." And apparently the translator didn't translate it because it would have been a bit awkward given Kim Jong-un's weight.
Yes.
Might have taken offence.
Well, I'm sure he found out about it later. It was very... somebody put the Curb the Enthusiasm sort of music underneath that. It's all... It's hard to know what to think, really, because it's... It sends a terrible message to a nuclear state. It sends a terrible message to anyone who's seeking nuclear missile technology, because it basically says, if you've got them, you've got a seat at the table, and we're going to ignore, you know, you killing dissidents, killing opposition members, killing members of your own family, killing your population, starving your population with, you know, anti-aircraft missiles and spending all your money that you could be spending on food, on munitions. It sends a dreadful message. Are we just suddenly now ignoring North Korea's crimes in the last, you know, so many years? And we're all applauding Donald Trump for, you know, bringing a couple of hostages home. And in the same way, the Republican press, the state press, effectively Fox News, would give Barack Obama short shrift for the same kind of olive branch that he sort of put out.
After Donald Trump left and he was on the plane going back to America, he tweeted something like, "Mission accomplished," even though it seemed a bit premature. He said, "Mission accomplished," and he said that the nuclear threat is no longer there. It's no longer a threat anymore. I think that was a bit premature. I'm a bit mixed on it all, really. I think it's good that they met. I'm hoping something will happen down the line. I mean, Kim Jong-un has done a lot in the last few months. He's released the prisoners. He's blown up the nuclear test site, even though it was already blown up because of a nuclear bomb that went off there. So that felt a bit of a empty gesture anyway. But yeah. There seems to be things happening. So I think it's too early to say. But I reckon it's good. Overall, it's good that he sat down with him and he got this done. And yeah, I mean, hopefully it'll lead to greater things. Shinzo Abe, who's back from his trip to Israel, where he had his chocolate parfait and a shoe, has said he would be willing to meet Kim in September. It's been quite funny seeing the Japanese reaction to it all over the last few months. When Trump originally said, "Oh, we're going to go and meet Kim in Singapore," the Japanese media or the Japanese government was a little bit sceptical, but nonetheless, they got on board. They were like, "Yeah, go Trump, this is good." And then Trump cancelled it, obviously. And they were like, "Yeah, go Trump for cancelling it. Good that you've cancelled it. Show you, North Korea." And then obviously it was put back on again. And the Japanese government was like, "Yeah." And it's just watching them not really know how to react. And it's all a bit awkward seeing how they deal with this ongoing situation. But I think it's encouraging. It's encouraging.
It is. I mean, he's done... They've done similar things before. They've reneged on agreements. They've, you know, sneaked around. But, I mean, what Trump has actually got, in many ways, what Trump does all the time, he never gets anything really achieved. He goes there for the photo opportunity. He gets his base all riled up and excited. There's no agreements for people going in and checking up that North Korea haven't got their centrifuges back up and running. A couple of collapsed tunnels on CNN isn't really gonna do it for me or anyone else, I think, in many ways. But, you know, talking's always good. But I just fear Donald Trump is not the most thoughtful of leaders. He really doesn't. He doesn't use the knowledge and history and the people who are around him to get anything done. So at this point, nothing really has been done, achieved, agreed. But talking is always good. But I will.
I think we'll know judgment.
You're closer than me, for crying out loud.
We'll know if I get woken up by another North Korean missile. That'll be the deciding factor in whether or not things have worked out. But I think we'll see in a few weeks, in 2 or 3 weeks, we'll know what the situation is, I think. They'll either go back to being a bit hostile or things will happen. So it's best to wait and see at this point. But yeah, it was one big photo opportunity, one big media publicity stunt. I mean, did you see that video the White House knocked up? that felt like North Korean
God.
Propaganda.
Oh my God. I mean,
if you haven't seen this, ladies and gentlemen, go and watch it, because it looks like something North Korea would cook up. It's like a, how would you describe it, Pete? It's like a propaganda video.
Well, it's just they managed to get like a kind of I watched the Korean language version, and they had like a kind of proper kind of film, like 1980s Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of book in Korean kind of voice going, trying to think of the Korean it's I what, know. Where is the toilet?
I love the... I love the... Yeah, the voiceover was very 1980s action film. It was
it was crazy.
We only have one chance in a lifetime to change everything once and for all. One chance to change destiny of mankind. And it's like, what are you talking about?
But, but this kind of really...
But, I mean, that was half the fun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this Hollywood kind of... it's all surface, no substance bullshit. My God, it might actually work, which is the most depressing thing about it, really. So, yeah, we're all idiots. We're in the age of idiocy. And this is the last hurrah of the imbeciles. And I'm just glad I'm here to see it.
The last hurrah of the imbeciles.
Yeah.
That's good, that. Did you just make that up?
I just made that up, mate. The last hurrah of the imbeciles. Mate, yeah.
You're wasted.
Tell Shinzo Abe.
Newspaper.
Tell Shinzo Abe. I'm over there in October. Let's sit down, have a chat over some okonomiyaki.
So whilst the Singapore summit dominated the news, the second biggest headline in Japanese news was somebody went on a bit of a rampage and killed, I think, two people.
Right.
No, he killed one and injured two.
Okay.
On a bullet train going from Tokyo to Osaka. He pulled out a knife, randomly attacked passengers, killing one, injuring two. And amongst this, I mean, this is quite a big deal. Obviously, the homicide rate in Japan is very low.
Mm.
And when it does happen, it's heavily reported in the media.
Yeah.
And one of the most interesting things out of this was there was some photos came out of passengers on the train using the seats as shields, as actual shields, because you can pull apart the seats on Shinkansen trains because they're made in sort of panels.
Yeah.
If you haven't already seen the way Shinkansen's bullet trains are cleaned, they're cleaned in 7 minutes, and it's an
incredible
thing.
Yeah.
Whenever you're at Tokyo Station or a major station, you can see it happen. They kind of, the cleaning staff march out onto the platform like soldiers. The doors open, they go in. 7 minutes later, they come out, and you've got a 1,000-seat train that's already just been cleaned in 7 minutes. It's a phenomenal sight.
Yeah.
And one of the factors in that is the chairs, a bit like Transformer chairs is the best way to describe them. All the seats turn around automatically, 180 degrees to face the direction of the train, but also you can pull them apart. If the seat's damaged or really dirty, they can just pull out the seat, replace it there and then. And so, yeah, some passengers were using it as a shield against this attacker. And it's just, imagine just getting off your seat, pulling it apart and using it as a shield.
Like a Captain America
it
shield.
Very Japanese.
Yeah, I mean, it's
very
it's,
Transformers.
I mean, it's a tragic tale, but it, you know, does show the ingenuity of a common passenger and stuff. And I presume they caught the guy and he's, you know...
Yeah, they caught him. They caught him.
But if you're on a train, I mean, like, how do you get security staff on? How do you kind of...
Chair shields.
I mean, those chairs are amazing. Like, the fact that you can press a lever on the bottom and just spin the entire three-chair system around. So if you're with your friends, you go, can we just spin that around? There's just so much room on Japanese trains. God, I love the Shinkansen. God, I love it.
I know. It's heartbreaking going back to the UK, getting on a train covered in rubbish that's just tightly packed together.
Like, even our best,
with uncomfortable seats.
Even our best trains. I mean, like, Virgin have got this big boner for their new... Virgin train. I'm going to type in Virgin train new into my laptop, and it's Japan. They're making a big deal about the fact that it's Japanese. Azuma, the first Virgin Azuma.
Azuma
trains have arrived. So yeah, they've got a new Azuma fleet, and it'll just be as dreadful as all the other trains, but it'll be like 5 miles per hour faster, which will increase
clever branding.
It's just dreadful. They've got the hiragana on the front of it, sort of thing, to make it look all bloody Japanese. And but the fundamental situation will be, it'll be really expensive, and everyone have to sit on the floor. sitting on the floor.
No matter how you brand it, the British transport system will always be abysmal. The worst thing to come out of this attack on the train, though, is the Japanese government's looking at security now, and they might have to start using metal detectors and all sorts of security to try and screen people getting on the train, which would just be annoying. You know, we're talking about, I think I read 20 to 30,000 people get on bullet trains every hour in Tokyo Station, which is an incredible number, 20,000 people an hour. And to screen them all would just cause so many delays and problems. Hopefully it doesn't come to that over this one incident. But I can see why they're being a bit paranoid.
Well, I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's one man. And, you know, the Japan has had attacks like this just in the street before. But I guess when you're in a big metal tube, that kind of accentuates the problem, so to speak, I guess. But yeah.
Long live the removal seats.
Long live them.
The removable seats. The third article that I want to get into is video games bars are a big deal in Japan, right? You can come in, you can have a drink, you can play a bit of Mario Kart or Super Smash Bros. It's so fun. I love it. But they've started, the police have started raiding them in Kyoto and Kobe for allegedly allowing customers to play video games, which haven't had the permission of the game makers. So a lot of these bars don't have any licenses from Nintendo or Capcom or whatever, or Sony. And when you sort of buy these video games, they're for personal use only. You can't effectively monetize them. So yeah, police have started raiding them, and it could be a sad end to the famous video game bars of Japan. Well, have you ever been to one?
Not in Japan. I mean, it's a big deal over here, but I suppose I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever seen a video game in a bar like that, really. But I think
I'm shocked. I thought you'd be the first person to be in a video games bar. Drinking and games.
I haven't seeked them out. Well, I mean, I guess San Francisco have got loads of them. Like LA, obviously, all the big cities have got them. I even went to one. I actually did a kind of bar based keynote about the E3 that's happening over in LA at the moment. I did one in a friend's video game bar. He's got four, three in London, one in Brighton. They're incredibly popular, and it's not just video games, the SNESs, the Xboxes, the PlayStation 4s and stuff. It's also board games as well, because obviously board games are back in a big, big way. So people have like enough room to play board games with each other.
Does he have a special license?
Well, you know what? I think it's one of those things that distance kind of helps a little bit. I think you can kind of set up something like that in America or London, and nobody really, you know, they don't really exercise their rights like that. It reminds me of when you, in the 90s and the 80s, when you used to watch like a VHS tape, there was always like that warning about not only piracy, but this video is not for public display. You can't watch it on a plane. You can't watch it on a bus. You can't watch it on an oil rig. It was always a big thing about oil rigs or prisons. They were the two big things, because it's counted as a public performance, basically. And obviously you do have to pay for that. It's like when you play music in a restaurant or a bar, in England, you should be PRS covered. So you should be paying money to the artists, because at the end of the day, they're entertaining your punters, I suppose. But I think in Japan, because you're much closer to where the video games are created, I imagine the copyright and the licensing police are a little bit more on it. And goodness knows, Japan love admin, so any bit of admin they can do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you are coming to Japan, though, and you do want to try a video games bar, there's a few good ones.
Okay.
I think the most famous one in Osaka is called Space Station. I've been there two or three times. It's pretty good. Space Station in Osaka. And the good one in Shinjuku in Tokyo is the 8-Bit Cafe. 8-Bit Cafe in Shinjuku. Drop into one of those, have a drink, play some games.
Oh, well, I'm looking at Space Station. There's a lot of SNESs hooked up. Unless you're in...
exactly.
I think in America they used to call it the SNES. So whenever like a British person talks about the Super Nintendo, they get really wound up because we say SNES, and they've always historically said the SNES. You know what it's like with the internet. People just get upset about sod all.
Well, I know, I've borne the brunt of that many a time.
I know.
I remember the last time I was in, I think it might have been Space Station in Osaka with a few friends. We played Bomberman on the SNES.
A great multiplayer game. That's a fantastic multiplayer game, that.
couple of gin and tonics with one hand, Bomberman in the other, and I won. I remember vividly that I won a lot of them as well, so that's why.
That's why you enjoyed it.
I'm happy.
I was once in a video game cafe in Poland. I was in Krakow on New Year's sort of time this year. And hilariously, like you'd usually expect on all the video game cafes, there'd be like, you know, a bit of Super Mario, there'd be, I don't know, a twin stick shooter or something, maybe like a couple of ones that's doing FIFA in Poland, because all of the Polish men are frightening UFC maniacs. Every single last pod had the UFC, the official UFC game on it, or Mortal Kombat. They love a scrap. They love watching scraps, it seems, the Polish male youth over there. So that was quite exciting.
If you're a Polish listener, do email us. Do verify this.
Disavow.
Pete Donaldson.
Very warm, lovely people. I enjoy my time in Poland whenever I go. But I'm just saying, every young man seems to know how to do some UFC fighting. They grow up on it. Oh, dear. Shall we head into Fax Machine?
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Gin time, yes.
And to my surprise, I stumbled across a secret, sexy club.
Wow.
We've
got an email from Tamlin. Hello, Tamlin. I love that name. That's beautiful. I'm not really sure if it's a girl or a boy. Doesn't really matter, I guess. But you sound a little bit like a village in Skyrim. Hello, Chris and Pete. Love the podcast. Does Chris ever plan on writing a book? Maybe now or when you're older, about your experiences in Japan. I would definitely read it. Sincerely, Tamlin.
Tamriel. I got the Skyrim reference. You mean Elder Scrolls, yeah?
Well, I mean Tamriel. No, but Tamlin sounds like a village in some kind of fantasy world.
Enchanted Woods.
Yeah, Witcher 3, something like that.
It does a bit. Yeah. A book. I have actually thought about writing a book. As to what it would be about, I don't really know. I think it would be... The two books I've thought about writing, one of them would be kind of a travel book with travel tips and advice and how to make the most of visiting Japan. And the second book would just be a kind of 5 years of living in Japan expose. It'd be called just Abroad in Japan, 5 years living in Japan, something like that. Just talking about the people I've met, things I've done, and hopefully it'll be interesting for anyone wondering, you know, what life in Japan's like. Mm. I haven't... God knows when I'd find the time to write it, though. Maybe I could ghost write it. Maybe you could write it for me, Pete.
Well, I am a published author. Football Ramble book came out a couple of years ago. Turns out, if you go with a major publisher, you don't get a big cut. £16, 16-17 quid for a hardback book. £2 you get out of that. And that's shared between all of the authors. Dreadful news. Why bother?
So you didn't make your millions.
Didn't make our millions.
Book.
I mean, we sold, you know, what they wanted us to sell. We sold them all. We went out of print in Amazon, but still, it was not worth the time. But if you're writing by yourself...
There you go then, Tamlin. Probably won't write a book now. Mate, Pete's put me off.
No point, yeah? It's, you know, it serves the ego. Something chronic. Have you got
it
any?
Would be cool.
Have you got any sort of recommendations book wise for books that are set in Japan? Jay McInerney, one of my favorite writers. He wrote a book called Ransom, which really goes off the boil last third. But if you can stand to get that far, this is an all right little yarn.
There's some good books. If you just want a book that tells you about Japan in depth and Japanese pop culture, yeah, there's a good book called A Geek in Japan.
Okay.
A Geek in Japan. Can't remember the name of the author, but just whack it into Amazon or Google and you'll find it. And it just gives you a really nice kind of a brief, once you've finished it, you'll know pretty much the basics about every aspect of Japanese culture.
Yeah.
And any, like, it's a really good book. I bought it, I think, just before I came here so I could get clued up on Japanese culture in general. But yeah, Geek in Japan was pretty good.
Okay.
That was good.
There's there's a guy called Brian Ashcraft who I met briefly in, was it New York? It might have been New York, you know. We had a wee chat, and he writes for the video game site Kotaku, and he he's written a couple of books on, I think, a lot on video games, but he's wrote a couple of books, one on Japanese tattoos and also Japanese whiskey as well. So if you're a fan of a bit of Hibiki or, you know, the Yakuza tattoos, I recommend those two books as well. They're very good. Brian Ashcraft, he's a good writer.
Hey, Chris and Pete. I lived in Japan for around 2 years from the time I was 18 years old,
whoa,
during which I studied Japanese and worked. I wasn't an English teacher, so I was able to speak Japanese all day, mostly every day, thus becoming quite proficient in Japanese. Mm. When you lived in the countryside, was it ever awkward bumping into other foreigners? When I lived in a rural town in Nagano, I found it a bit awkward seeing another white gaijin. It's like I got used to being one of the only ones there, and I would just stare at them as any other high school kid would, like they were some kind of alien. I would then realise how dumb I was being and would usually say hi, but it seemed to be a bit awkward sometimes. Did the same kind of thing ever happen to you, Zach? I found that. Yeah. Get that all the time back in the countryside. It was always weird. I remember going into like a department store in Yamagata once, just seeing a foreigner who I didn't know. I mean, you tend to know all the other foreigners out in the countryside, right? You tend to know them in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
So when you see one that you don't know, who's not another teacher,
ooh,
it's like,
you're new.
you've broken into my space, you know. You feel a bit territorial. And it's always awkward because you don't know how to react. I had this the other day. I was walking by a river, having a nice romantic afternoon stroll. And a few paces ahead, I saw this foreigner like jogging towards me. And I was like, a foreigner. And I didn't know how to react. I didn't know if I was going to wave
push him in the river, talk
or do anything. throw him in the river. That's what British folk do.
And I
felt a bit awkward. But as he approached, I sort of looked up from the pavement and sort of nodded and went,
never.
He gave me the back. So we interacted. But yeah, it can actually be quite awkward,
yeah,
to be honest. So don't be surprised if you find yourself in the Japanese countryside and you have an awkward interaction with a foreigner.
Especially when you're not in like a tourist spot or in a major city. It is one of the last places in the world where you just don't see that many white people. And so it must be like...
Absolutely.
Do you ever find a situation where if you were some Japanese people and another white guy's in like kind of in an extended group of friends and they sort of put you together? Like if you've got two gay friends that don't know each other, you're like, oh, you guys should like get together. Because we're pathetic,
it does
straight,
happen, yeah,
cis people.
It's a godsend though. I mean, I've been to a lot of Japanese parties and networking events, and if there is another foreigner there, I do breathe a sigh of relief because it means I won't. If I get run down from speaking Japanese and acting in a very, I don't know, composed manner, as is expected with Japanese etiquette, it could be quite taxing. Like meeting lots of people and doing all the bowing, exchanging business cards, having the same superficial bullshit conversations about where I'm from, why I'm in Japan, what am I doing, you know.
Yeah.
With a foreigner, you can just strike up a much more natural conversation. So, yes, foreigners can be a godsend at the right events, I find. You do get thrown together more often than not.
And also kind of like, Japanese people, what are you doing here? You could just make up massive lies. I'm here to kill Shinzo Abe. I'm here to assassinate the president.
I might try that. I wonder what response would happen.
Yeah, probably.
Visa revoked.
See you later.
The end of the visa, isn't
it? We got an email from Monica. Hello, Monica. I'm relatively confident that Monica is a girl. Hey, gents. I loved watching Natsuki the movie. Other than the privilege of learning more about Natsuki, it was great to see Pete. He's far more good-looking than I anticipated. I didn't read this far down the page, Chris. I'm glad you left that in. Do either of you lovely gents listen to any Japanese music? If so, what genre, bands, etc.? Ooh. I mean, the email does go on saying, also, if Natsuki decides to visit New York to visit Sid Vicious, can my cat and I join along? We're native New Yorkers. Her name is Ming, and one of her many nicknames is Ming Vicious. Lovely old job.
Ming Vicious.
Well, what I was going to say about you visiting Highgate Cemetery, because you're on the lookout for Sid Vicious. I mean, I don't know how that came about, on how Natsuki got that in his head. Did I mention on a previous podcast that if you just walked a little bit further down from Karl Marx's big head, you could have visited Malcolm McLaren's grave, which
we did.
Oh, you
did?
Which is, of course, the manager of the Sex Pistols, yeah.
If you watch Natsuki the movie, Natsuki strikes up a conversation with some sort of, with a gardener,
yeah.
I think. He's like, Sid Vicious, where's Sid Vicious? And he's like, Sid Vicious, he's not here, mate. But he did take us to Malcolm McLaren.
Oh, did he? Right, okay,
Natsuki,
yeah.
Yeah, Natsuki was there at the manager's gravestone. We didn't put it in because we thought Karl Marx was more interesting. Although, in hindsight, the Karl Marx thing, so many bloody people have commented on it,
gosh,
equating Natsuki to like some sort of mass murderer.
You can't,
because
you
think Karl Marx
is Stalin.
Millions of people.
Karl Marx equals Stalin equals Natsuki is a commie. Yeah. But and also you forget that communism is still a dirty word in some parts of the world, and also you forget that politics is polarizing and occasionally quite toxic. A little bit down the way as well from Karl Marx's big head was notable japester Jeremy Beadle as well, a man who in the 1980s and 90s here on British television, he was like the Ashton Kutcher prankster, but a lot less attractive.
I can't believe you just compared Jeremy Beadle to Ashton Kutcher.
Well, he did like a punk show, didn't he? Like a punk. You've been punked.
It's not a road. I'm not going down that road.
he visited my school once.
In terms of Japanese music, do you remember when you came here and we were driving around?
Yes.
Did I introduce you to Japanese city pop music from the 1980s?
No, but you like... The thing about Japanese music, it's quite, certainly in the 80s, it's a lot more derivative. And talking to a couple of Japanese musicians who actually do like video game music and stuff, I was in Kyoto and I was at a video game, kind of indie video game party, and I was chatting to a composer over there, and he's in like a funk band, and he was saying that, you know, a lot of pop music is, it's all quite criminalised, the kind of... The systems underneath it is underpinned by the criminal underworld, etc. So all of the music is kind of like NSYNC and Britney Spears, but with modern recording and production techniques over the top of it. So it's very samey. It's very derivative of what you get in America. And there's an identity thing with, I think, the Japanese music from what I've heard. This guy who produced music for the video games, he's also in like a funk band. And he would be kind of putting different influences into his funk sort of bass playing, and the singer would sort of stop him. All Japanese guys, apart from this guy, who's half Japanese, half American, and he was basically they were sort of saying, "Right, don't play like that because that's not a funk band." They're very set, and they're always very dogmatic when it comes to what kind of style of music they play, which I find quite fascinating. Really, there's very little freedom. They're very rigid, but I can't remember you playing me much in the car, but you played a bit of Oasis and all that.
I did. I my favourite. If you just type it, if you go on YouTube and type in city pop,
okay,
later, or if you're listening, go and do it. That's what I listen to a lot of the time when I'm working. It's music from the 1980s. Obviously, in the 1980s. Personal radios and boomboxes and things were popular, and people just go out around the city and listen to music in parks and things. And it kind of, it's very funky kind of music. You can sort of, it's very easy listening. It's quite upbeat. I don't often know what the singers are saying, but the music is so funky that I just enjoy listening to
it. It's like futuristic,
and,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's like it's from the 1980s, but it feels very futuristic-y.
So, it's like the sort of thing you'd
describe it.
The sort of thing you'd hear in like Akira, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. And what and like Blade Runner. I think it's what they thought music might be like in 20, 30 years, although it's definitely not. Yeah. But yeah, my favourite artist is Tatsuro Yamashita. Tatsuro Yamashita. But just type in City Pop or Tatsuro Yamashita into YouTube and you'll find it. Mm. That's what I listen to more or less every day when I'm working. I just have it on in the background or when I'm in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to listen to when I'm working. It cheers me up. Oh. Brings a smile to my face.
Maybe I should get involved in that because I can't listen to things that have lyrics because I get very distracted. One of there was this band that they were wonderful. They like this kind of like quite again quite rigid kind of new metal band sort of thing that would when I used to be in the bar in Shibuya. They were called Maximum the Hormone, and it's a very specific track that was released in 2013. And I don't know, I think the whole song was called something else, but there was a refrain at the end of it that basically, it turned from a new metal song into a kind of very sweet pop track where they basically pleaded their fans not to upload their music to file sharing platforms. And the peer-to-peer file-sharing platform at the time was called Winnie. And the whole thing was like, stop, 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 stop the Winnie upload. And it was a beautiful end to a song. So just
amazing.
So just Google Winnie upload and Maximum the Hormone was the band. And back in the day when I used to listen to a lot of punk rock, obviously one of the big hitters over there, High Standard, they were signed to Fat Records, I think, for a brief period of time, but they would they famously did a cover of Police Every Breath You Take, or one of those kind of like pop tracks, but they were incredibly good. Mad Capsule Markets, were they Japanese? I think they were Japanese as well, but other than that, no.
Maximum the Hormone. Maximum, I still can't believe that's actually a name.
Maximum the Hormone. So yeah, lovely old
Some
job.
Pretty wacky names out here.
Definitely.
My favourite, I think another one of my favourite Japanese bands is called Blanky Jet City.
Blanky Jet City. You having that?
Kind of random name. But they were out in the late, I think mid to late 90s.
Right.
And Natsuki and I actually bonded over some of their music. And I used some of their songs in my earlier videos before I got scared of copyright problems and tried to avoid doing that. But yeah, if you go and look through my earlier videos, you'll certainly hear a lot of their stuff. It's kind of a bit punk rock. I guess it's the rock genre, a bit punk rocky.
Yeah.
They have a lot of English lyrics in their songs as well. But yeah, they're quite refreshing because I was a bit sick of. I mean, when you walk around Japan, you hear a lot of J-poppy
noise
music, which is just it sounds like a cat being strangled, and I hate it. So when I stumbled across Blanky Jet City and these kind of a lot of Japanese rock bands, it was so refreshing, and I was so relieved to, you know, find something that wasn't. Blanky Jet City.
I once interviewed Miyavi, which is he's like a virtuoso kind of guitarist, and he was over in England for like a show. He was like, you know, he could fill out fucking stadiums over there, but over here, you know, I think he managed to sell a few tickets at the Hammersmith Apollo or the Brixton Academy or something.
Right, yeah.
To the, you know, to Japanese expats effectively. But it was sort of so interesting to see, you know, he could walk down the street in England and not be bothered. But yeah, he was a nice chap. Yeah, practiced some of my Japanese on him. Lovely old job.
Miyavi.
He was in a film with Angelina Jolie. He, I can't remember it. Is it Unbroken, the film? He played like a Japanese prison guard or something. He had chops.
Oh, God.
He had chops.
Didn't butcher anyone in the prison of war camp.
He was sadistic. He was sadistic.
Got a bit of a rap here. All
right, okay, did it right.
Because of the violent nature of it and the way it depicted.
Yes.
Well, the way it depicted Japanese prison of war camps.
Well, Miyavi got absolute pelts for that, and I think he's only just restored his reputation. So there you go. There you go. I don't know how old he is. Like, I think he was popular in the 90s, but I could not figure out where how old he is. But he seemed rather popular. I think that's about it for this week, isn't it, Chris? Should we chuck out the email and get out of here, and we'll see each other and speak to the people next week?
Yeah. So next week, guys, we'll be answering a lot of your questions.
Wow.
We've And again, the fax machine, the inbox is rammed, Ramosaurus, with your questions. If you've got some questions, though, send them in. AbroadinJapanPodcast@gmail.com, and they might appear in an upcoming episode. But no matter where you are out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great Wednesday or Thursday or whatever day of the week it is you listen to this, and have a good one. See you later, guys. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.